And welcome to the debut edition of National Football Authority Radio's NFL Writers Roundtable. I am your host, Matt Baxendale, and I'm joined today by two of the best NFL writers you will find anywhere on the internet. We're joined by Russell Baxter. He is the football guru. We're also joined by Robert Neely from Football Relativity. Both these men also write for National Football Authority. And gentlemen, how are you doing tonight?
We're doing well.
Great.
We get to talk about football.
Yeah, and you know, when we're talking about football, not a lockout is a fantastic occurrence in my mind. So let's get right into it here since we are finally through this lockout. That's a bad word. It's like a cuss word. We won't say it anymore. Let's talk about the games we saw on the field this weekend. A lot of standouts, a lot of players maybe we hadn't seen in a while. So, Robert, let's start with you. Normally, you're covering the Carolina Panthers. We've been talking left and right about how much you go to training camp and how you're a great person to follow for Panthers news. But let's talk about a different team this week. Let's talk about the Indianapolis Colts. You know, there's been a lot of talk about Peyton Manning with his neck injury. There's been a lot of concern about the Colts saying, has their run on it come to a conclusion? What do you think about the Colts this year? Do you think they're going to regress? And do you think we've really seen a lot from them that's going to be able to give an indicator of whether or not that it's going to happen this fall?
Well, I think the thing that you see with the Colts is that they're relying on a lot of guys who have not traditionally been reliable for whatever reason. I mean, you've got guys like Austin Collie and Anthony Gonzalez. They're key guys in the receiving core who are really injury prone. And those guys are counted on to play key roles. You've got a rookie left tackle in Anthony Costanzo who the Colts are really relying on to protect Peyton Manning's blind side. And, you know, with Manning's neck injury that he is still overcoming, him staying upright is even more important this year. And then you see on defense, as they lost guys like Bob Sanders in the last year, they cut Kelvin Hayden in the offseason. They lost Clint Session, trying to plug in veterans like Ernie Sims or Tyler Brayton or Jamal Anderson or Tommy Harris. And some of those guys have disappointed elsewhere. You know, Tommy Harris has been an injury concern after his great years with the Bears.
Anderson,
Sims, Brayton, all those guys are former first-round picks who have never lived up to the hype. So they're trying to add pieces to kind of – it's almost like they're trying to plug the holes in the ship to stay afloat. But this is a team that last year failed to win 12 games for the first time in 6 years. And I think that we're very close to the end of the Colts era. And in a story coming out on National Football Authority this week, we'll talk a little bit more about that and try to figure out whether – they can keep it going one more year, whether this is the year the Colts finally fall out of the AFC South title race and miss the playoffs.
All right, so in your opinion, is this the last year of the lights of the Colts dynasty, or do they have another year or two left to go that where their window to win a Super Bowl is still open?
I think Peyton Manning is really the key to that. If he can keep his performance up, I honestly believe that with just an average quarterback, the Colts have been a 6 or 7 win team the last couple of years. And Peyton Manning has really put that team on his back and taken it to the Super Bowl 2 years ago and took it to a 10-6 record when they probably should have been the opposite of that 6-10 last year. I'm not going to bet against Peyton Manning, but with Houston coming on, with Jacksonville coming on, I think one more year at most in the playoffs is what we're going to see from the Colts. I think sooner rather than later, they are going to miss the playoffs.
Yeah, and you know, when they're relying on a lot of veterans who haven't panned out elsewhere, rookies like Anthony Costanzo, who, let's face it, he is as good as he might be, as good as he was at Boston College, he's not proven against any NFL competition. And when he's protecting a quarterback with a repaired neck on his blind side, that's not a formula for success. So I guess we're going to have to see how it works out with the Colts this year, but this could be sort of the end of an era in Indianapolis. Let's switch subjects here, though, a little bit. Let's go over to Russell Baxter. He is the football guru. And, Russell, we were gonna discuss this last week as part of our abbreviated introduction on NFA Radio. But now that we have a full writer's roundtable, let's get the full lowdown of this article you have coming out this week on NationalFootballAuthority.com about the best playmakers in the National Football League. Who are some of these guys, and what can we look forward to with this article?
Well, I think the most important thing is look forward to some of these guys playing. Because the two guys at the top of the list have certainly had their issues when it comes to their contract. And, of course, we're talking about DeSean Jackson from the Philadelphia Eagles and Chris Johnson, who is a holdout right now with the Tennessee Titans. And these are the guys who put the ball in their hands and at any one time you think can get to the end zone from 20, 30, 40, 50, you know, any way out. Johnson as a receiver and a rusher. And of course, is DeSean Jackson, who I like to refer to as Forrest Gump. Punt returns, rushing, receiving. He does just about anything. You know, I point out in the article about what he's done to the New York Giants alone, just in the last four times he's played them. And he's had four touchdowns of 50-plus yards, two receptions and two punt returns. And I think we remember the last punt return he had against the New York Giants.
That was the moment of the year in the regular season last year. There's no question about it. But looking forward to this year, you mentioned Chris Johnson's in the middle of a contract holdout at this point. The story that seems to be floating around is that he's not holding himself up to the standards of other tailbacks. He's holding himself up to what he calls quote-unquote other playmakers. Do you think he's going to get the 30-plus million guaranteed money he's asking for? And is he going to hold out through the start of the regular season?
Well, gee, let me think about that. No. And I just find it hard to believe you're going to pay anybody that kind of money. You know, that's not even quarterback money, what he's looking for. But it's funny because he is trying to rival himself over to some of the guys that are in this piece and so on. You know, like an Adrian Peterson, who's one of those type of guys.
Peterson's contract?
Well, I mean, it's always hard to talk about you know, what a guy deserves. I mean, obviously players want to get as much as they can and so on. And you know how it works. I mean, listen, the last thing fans want to hear about right now is money. Okay. We just went, you know, fans just went through 4.5 months of talking about CBAs and lockouts and, you know, anything to do financial. I mean, it's a sore subject right now. So the fact that people are back on the field, we play preseason games, is all a positive. So I don't know how this is going to end. And it's safe to say the Titans need him. Even when they had him last year, they were 6-10. He's obviously their best offensive player. And, I'm willing to bet with a head coach like Mike Munchak, who is, you know, in his first year on the job, but I think we know the style of football the Tennessee Titans are getting ready to play, considering the style of football he played as a Hall of Fame guard. It would behoove Chris Johnson to get in there and do his thing. But, you know, the article really doesn't touch so much about Chris Johnson and his holdout per se, but it just talks about the, you know, like the fun guys in the league and, you know, guys like Mike Wallace, who you don't think of maybe as like, you know, Chris Johnson. He's not a Pro Bowler yet and so on, but the guy caught 10 touchdown passes last year and averaged just over 40 yards a touchdown. Reception. And the one guy that I throw out there kind of as a sleeper to maybe watch this year is Jacoby Ford, the wide receiver and return artist from the Oakland Raiders, who had a dynamite rookie year, kickoffs, running the ball, didn't get an enormous amount of touches, but got enough to make an impression. And who knows, the second season and not the third season could be the charm for him.
Absolutely. And I think a lot of people who are college football fans remember how effective Jacoby Ford was at Clemson. The guy has world-class speed. So seeing him as a playmaker is definitely not a stretch whatsoever. So definitely check out the Playmakers article. It's coming out of NationalFootballAuthority.com this week. And one more playmaker that I guess I'm going to bring up with here is someone from my own alma mater. We were talking about him off air. I'm talking about rookie free agent signing by the name of Dane Sonsenbacher for the Bears, who has really been impressive early in the camp. The Bears are a team that really are in badly need of a good receiver. I mean, basically right now they have Johnny Knox, they have Devin Hester, both of which are more of these straight line burner types. And a guy like Sonsenbacher, who hadn't even played a preseason game to its fullest yet, is already being called uncoverable during their first broadcast. Russell, let's go back to you here. Do you think that the Bears are really going to be able to take another step forward this season with Jay Cutler? Are they going to really be able to match last year's success? And could a guy like Sonsenbacher be the key to making their offense significantly more productive?
Well, I think, listen, their offense went through a change last year. And to the credit of Mike Martz, who has always been kind of criticized for being very rigid in his ways, not running the football, abandoning it very early when a team is behind, he remade that team last year. And, you know, they became somewhat of a grinded out football team. Now, obviously, he would like to become a little more balanced, you know, and throw the ball a little. And again, balance has never been the forte of Mike Martz. I mean, how many times did you see with the Rams, 8 carries for 9 yards, 7 carries for 6 yards? And I'm not exaggerating here. These are, you know, these are the kind of things you saw when he was the head coach. You know, this is, and the year the Rams won the Super Bowl and Mike Martz was the offensive coordinator, you know, he had a Marshall Faulk in the backfield who had 1,000 yards rushing and 1,000 yards receiving. Okay. He, until Chris Johnson broke it a couple years ago, had the record for total yards from scrimmage. So that was a balanced football team. That was just not Kurt Warner thrown to Isaac Bruce and Torrey Holt and Oz Akeem and so on. You know, that was a balanced football team. But to me, the key with the Bears is the defense. And I think, you know, what happened with Jay Cutler last year, and then, of course, what happened to him at the end of the year in the championship game, I think what happened is that people forgot that the Bears defense kind of got back to where they were a couple of years ago. Because, you know, starting with probably the second half of the 06 season, even though they wound up going to the Super Bowl that year and losing to the Colts, there had been a steady digression of Chicago's defense. And last year, Julius Peppers came in and Urlacher stayed healthy. And, you know, I know Troy Polamalu and Clay Matthews were the, you know, the top two candidates for Defensive Player of the Year. And the award, guys, as you know, is Defensive Player of the Year. It's not Defensive MVP. But if I was going to give a Defensive MVP last year, it would have gone to Julius Peppers. Because I think he did things last year that he had a different kind of reputation when he was with Carolina. Athletic, great pass rusher, guy who could block kicks and so on. Last year, he took on a different role with the Chicago Bears. You know, I don't think people realize that Israel Adonijé had the same amount of sacks and the same amount of forced fumbles and I think just about the same amount of tackles as Julius Peppers. And I think what Peppers did for that whole defensive line, that whole defensive unit, you know, can't be understated.
Yeah, Peppers, I remember when he signed that contract, a lot of people were questioning whether or not he was going to actually be able to live up to the dollar amount, especially considering the way his Panthers career sort of came to an end. And, you know, last year I think he was really a revelation for the Chicago Bears. They were a team that's kind of been bothered by injury. He was that playmaker they really needed in the trenches. But I just mentioned the Carolina Panthers. We're going to throw it back to Robert Neely, who is NationalFootballAuthority.com's resident Panthers expert. And, Robert, they have a certain rookie quarterback by the name of Cameron Newton, who, let's face it right now, is looking like a potential candidate to be the starter from day one. I know he's competing with Jimmy Clausen, but what was your read on the way Cam Newton looked the first game of the preseason? Where do you think that confidence stands right now?
You know, Newton has really looked really good throughout training camp, and I think we saw in the first preseason game all that potential that he has. You know, threw some beautiful passes, one that to Greg Olsen for 30 yards down the seam. And it looks like everybody's saying, and just the sense you get is that Newton has won over the team. He's won over the organization. And come next week when Ron Rivera announces that the starter for week one of the regular season, it's going to be Cam Newton. You know, Newton's not been perfect. There's some accuracy issues. We saw him throw off his back foot 3 times in a row in the red zone. On the 2-minute drill of the first preseason game at the end of the first half. But his work ethic, his team first attitude, and his ability to avoid the crucial mistakes, you know, avoiding any interceptions. Jimmy Clausen threw the crucial interception against the Giants, not Cam Newton. And so every sign points to Newton being the guy. And I can't tell you how excited that the Panthers fans are. I've never seen in the history of the Panthers franchise, and granted, that's less than 20 years. Fans get behind one player so much, and especially this quickly. So there's definitely a lot of interest in Newton, and I think fans are going to be excited to see him become the starter as the regular season begins.
You know, you said the key words a little early there in your answer, which is he's won over the team. And I can tell you right now, when I think Jimmy Clausen, I did not think leader of men. I did not think NFL quarterback. I didn't think leader of an NFL franchise. You know, and what do they always say about players? Players know who can play. So I think, you know, Cam Newton coming out, and maybe he's raw, maybe he's a rookie, maybe he has mechanical flaws, but I think his teammates would much rather go to war with him than anybody else on the roster under center. So that's a big win for them there. I don't think we can expect a lot from Newton this first year. We were discussing this earlier last week, in fact, that maybe the Panthers might be in for a little bit of growing pains. But, you know, what do you think we can realistically expect from Newton, especially in the early going in the season?
You know, with any quarterback, and Russell could probably speak to this even more, I think we'll see with Newton, he'll win some games maybe he's not supposed to win. And, of course, he'll make some crucial mistakes that cost the Panthers some games too. But if they're, by the end of the season, winning about half their games in the second half of the year, and if Newton can keep that touchdown-interception ratio around even, I think that's a pretty good start to his career.
Well, that's certainly a – a good prognostication for the Panthers to have this year, some development from their franchise quarterback. While we're talking about prognostication, gentlemen, we've got some of the NFL previews dropping this week on National Football Authority. The first division is coming out on Wednesday. We're talking about the NFC North. Russell, let's go with you first here. Who was the team to beat in the NFC North? Is it still the Green Bay Packers? Maybe even the team like the Detroit Lions. Are they the team to beat this year?
Well, no, the Green Bay Packers are the teams to beat, and it's funny to say that because they didn't win the division last year. All they did was win the Super Bowl. You know, that kind of trumps – you know, I'm a great believer in champions until dethroned. And even though I know the Bears are the champions of the North, the Packers are the champions in the NFL. And as you can tell in this offseason, they basically went out and did nothing in terms of bringing in free agents. But they probably have more key additions coming back than just about anyone, because those key additions are coming from their injured reserve list. Guys like Jermichael Finley, guys like Ryan Grant, guys like Morgan Burnett. You know, this was a team that was racked last year with key people going down. And all they did was get hot at the right time, which has kind of become what's happened in the NFL. In terms of the playoffs, just get into the playoffs. And we've seen it three times in the last 6 years now that a team has won three road playoff games and gone on to win the Super Bowl. That never used to happen. But we saw the Steelers did it in 05, the Giants in 07, and now the Packers do it as well. So they gathered themselves. It's funny. They played one of their best games of the season without their starting quarterback, and that was when they went up to New England and lost. But I thought that was the turning point of their year because of the confidence they gained in outplaying the Patriots, even though they lost the game. And I think they're the team to beat. I know the Lions are surging. It'll be interesting to see with the Bears. I think there's mixed reviews on the Bears. And I know, you know, Donovan McNabb and Adrian Peterson are there in Minnesota, but I think there's some cracks on the lines for the Vikings. You start to see a little bit of dip in age affecting them on the defensive line a little last year, which has been their hallmark in recent years. Offensive line, obviously, Bryant McKinney fell out of favor there, and he's gone. So the trenches are a little bit of a question mark for the Vikings for the first time in a while. And they're the team to finish last to begin with last year anyway.
Looking at those four teams, it looks like it's going to be a pretty deep division this year. And I think a lot of the Detroit Lions' fortunes are going to come down to whether Matthew Stafford can stay healthy. This is a guy who's struggled with some injuries in the first 2 years in his career. But if he can stay on the field for 16 games, the Lions could be a real surprise. But you're right. Nobody is going to beat the Packers if they can stay healthy this year. They won the Super Bowl last year with, I believe, 14 players who had their seasons ended due to injury. That's unheard of. So I think the Packers aren't just the favorite in the NFC North. They're probably the favorites to repeat as Super Bowl champions.
Oh, I agree with that as well. And go back to Matthew Stafford doing it. You know, when you hear the number 13 of 32 when it comes to the quarterback, that could be bad in two ways. It sounds like that's a bad game for him, but it's actually the number of games he has started and played in since he came in the NFL. Only 13, which means he's missed 19. And in another year of missing significant amount of games, he's going to start to get a label on him as a guy who can't stay healthy.
Yeah, and that's something you don't want, because, I mean, essentially what you just said there with that statistic means that in his first two seasons, he's missed a whole season plus worth of games. And that's not a way you want to develop a young quarterback in the National Football League. But let's transition here, though, to the other NFL preview we have coming out this week, and that's coming out this Friday, and we're talking about the AFC South. And we're going to go back to Robert Neely here. Robert, you've got that article on the Colts that's coming out this week on NationalFootballAuthority.com. Let's look at the rest of the division here. You know, we're not too sure if this is the final season for the Colts to be a contender, but the rest of the division, it's sort of in flux right now. It's going to be very interesting to see how it plays out. In your eyes, who is the favorite in the South Division this year?
You know, I still think as long as Peyton Manning is standing upright, and we think that that's going to be the case come week one, the Colts are a slight favorite. But obviously the Texans have made a huge step forward this offseason, you know, addressing their problem area by adding Jonathan Joseph and Danielle Manning in the secondary to shore up what was one of the league's worst back fours last year. And so, you know, you expect Houston's offense to still be running up to par with Arian Foster and Andre Johnson and Matt Schaub putting up points. And if they can just stop other teams a little bit, Houston will be there. And I tell you, I really like what the Jaguars have done. They've kind of slipped under the radar, but I really think that with guys like Paul Posluszny and Clint Session, DeJuan Landry, Drew Coleman, and adding Matt Roth late as a kind of linebacker and pass rusher, they've really helped themselves on defense a lot. And with the running game they have, with the strong offensive line play that they have, you know, that's a team that may be able to grind its way to a division title. I think those are the three teams that'll be fighting. I think they'll beat up on each other a little bit, and one of those teams will squeak forward to 10 wins, maybe 11, to win it. And if you pin me down right now, I would say the Colts, but I think the Jaguars have I would put as the second shot there, even more than the Texans in my mind. And then, yeah, you know, what's been going on with the Texans, their running backs have really gotten dinged up so far in the preseason, and they just have never done it before. You know, Jack Del Rio has taken that Jaguars team to the playoffs before. The Texans have topped out at 9-7 in their franchise history. So that's my personal hunch, and I'm probably out on an island with that. But that's what I see. And then with the Titans,
you're not a little bit of an island me. That's yeah, for sure.
But you know what? I'm okay being the contrarian and making that pick, because if it comes right, then everybody will say, hey, I knew what I was talking about. And if not, you know, people already think I'm crazy. So we're good.
Hey, you know what? I respect individual thinkers. They may not all be correct, but I respect you trying to make your own individual thoughts on there. So that's a good thing. But I will say this, though, about the South, is that every year we hear it's going to be the Texans' year. Every year the Texans are going to win the division. The Texans are going to beat the Colts. And every year they look like they're going to get the job done, and then they fail spectacularly at key moments. This team has gone 8-8, it seems like, every single year in the last decade. And now I know that's a little bit of hyperbole on my part, but the Texans have always been more talented than their results. So if they really break through this year, I'll be surprised, not just because they finally beat the Colts and sort of sent Peyton Manning to the sidelines for the first time in a very long time in his own division, but the fact that they actually got the job done on their own. So it'll be a very interesting to watch the AFC South this year. That preview comes out this Friday on NationalFootballAuthority.com. And gentlemen, here, before we wrap up the very first edition of the NFL Writers Roundtable, there's one other piece of news that came out today that I wanted to broach with you. The news broke late on Tuesday that the NFL is delaying the supplemental draft. Now, the only plausible reason I can come up for this is they're still trying to resolve whether or not Terrell Pryor is eligible. What's the holdup with this? It seems pretty clear-cut that the kid left school. He had some issues with being able to play. I know there were suspensions. Why isn't Pryor eligible, and is he the reason they're holding up the supplemental draft?
Well, I mean, I'm not 100% sure that's the reason. It seems like they're reviewing his case and so on. And, you know, listen, it's been a year of delays in the NFL. Why wouldn't the supplemental draft be another one of them? I mean, the only thing that's really happening on time so far this year, and again, hyperbole to use your word, you know, was the NFL draft. We managed to get the preseason underway but we lost a preseason game. And of course, free agency started, you know, months later because of the lockout and so on. But that seems to be the situation, is they seem to be reviewing his case. I don't know that for him, but that's the reports that are out and so on. And you know, the reason we have supplemental drafts is to accommodate those athletes who wind up leaving school for various circumstances. You know, sometimes it's because you fulfilled your obligation later. You know, many times it's because of off the field problems and you've been dismissed from the team. You know, we've seen both instances. You know, the Bernie Kosars and situations like that, where, you know, he decided to, you know, fulfill his class obligations and went in the supplemental draft, and taken by the Cleveland Browns in 1985. So, I mean, there's all different reasons you have a supplemental draft. So I think the league, which is it's obviously very sensitive right now when it comes to all matters, want to make sure they get this right. And there is a chance that he can enter the draft, and the reason he didn't enter the draft in the first place was more technicality and paperwork in terms of timing. I don't think they want to deny, because what's going to happen to Terrell Pryor? He's not going to do anything this year. He's not going to play college football. He won't play professional football. The CFL season has already started. The UFL is right now in disarray, it seems like. If you even have one. So, you know, that keeps him out of and I don't mean that in the sense that he has an obligation. They have an obligation to make sure he makes a living. I just think they want to be sure that they're doing the right thing on all platforms and seeing if there is, you know, cause for him to enter the supplemental draft. And, you know, we'll see what happens from them. You know, every once in a while you get, you know, some stars who come out of these supplemental drafts, like the Chris Carters and Jamal Williams and Mike Wall. Like we talked about Bernie Kosar as well. You know, it's always interesting to see the guys who come out and what their contributions turn out being.
You know, there's another conspiracy theory that I don't think is quite as far-fetched. Sure, delaying the draft because of Pryor is one possibility. And let's face it, outside of the very, very, very remote chance that Georgia tailback Caleb King gets picked, Pryor is really the only player that's currently in the supplemental draft field, if he's, of course, cleared, that would actually be picked. But the Miami scandal that was breaking tonight in college football, late Tuesday night for those who are listening, there's a lot of speculation out there that you could see a number of Miami starters suspended for the entire season. And part of me wonders if the reason that they're suspending the supplemental draft indefinitely instead of saying we're going to set it back until Friday or Monday – I wonder if they're starting to see how that's going to play out, because there are a ton of talented players that are named in this scandal. I don't know if you two have read the report yet from Yahoo Sports, but it is explosive, and that could completely change the face of the supplemental draft if all of those players aren't eligible this fall either. So there's going to be a lot interesting to watch play out this year with the supplemental draft. And like you said, Russell, it's all just another delayed aspect of this NFL season. On that note, gentlemen, let's get – see where people can follow you guys, follow your work aside from NationalFootballAuthority.com. Let's go back to you, Robert. Where can people find you on Twitter, and where else can people read your work?
FootballRelativity.com is where we have not only links to all the National Football Authority stuff, but all the other stuff we're writing on the NFL right now. And then people can follow me on Twitter, at Robert Neely. That's N-E-E-L-Y. So love to get in on the conversation with people on Twitter to talk about the Panthers or anything else in the NFL. If I said something crazy that you want to rip me for, send a tweet on over and we'll talk about it.
Excellent. That's Robert Neal. And by the way, if you are a Carolina Panthers fan, you do not want to miss his tweets. The man is at camp all the time. And of course, don't forget to check out his article in the Indianapolis Colts coming out on NationalFootballAuthority.com this week. Let's go over to you, Russell. Where can everybody find you outside of NationalFootballAuthority.com?
Well, you can also check out my website, which is profootballguru.com, my Facebook page, which is also profootballguru, footballpros.com as well. And if you want to send me something on Twitter, at backsfootballguru. We continue to count down the season. As you guys know, it's today is 23 days until the regular season starts. An interesting number, it's the same amount of touchdown passes Randy Moss caught in 2007 when he set the NFL record.
Awesome. Well, that is a great statistic. Those are the kind of stats you can find over at the Pro Football Guru, so make sure you check it out. Make sure you check out Russell's Playmakers article that's dropping on NationalFootballAuthority.com this week. And one final shout-out we're going to give here is to Bear Heiser. He is our NFL editor-in-chief. He wasn't able to join us tonight. He'll be on a lot of our future NFL writers roundtables. You can follow him at Bear Heiser, and Bear's going to be at Saints training camp when they're out in California next week. So you want to follow him if you're a New Orleans Saints fan, so you can get all the updates on the practices. And I, of course, am your host. I'm Matt Baxendale. MattBaxendel is where you follow me on Twitter. And I guess we have two Baxes now that we have Russell here, but there's plenty of room for all of us. And of course, you can find me more in the college football section at NationalFootball30.com. I'm in charge of our college football previews. You can check those dropping this week. We also have the Big 12 and the Pac-12, so make sure you check those out as well. Robert, Russell, thank you so much for joining us here on the first ever NFL Writers Roundtable, and I'm sure we'll have you both back on soon.
Thanks, guys.
Have a great night.
All right, gentlemen. And for all the listeners here on the National Football Authority Radio, I want to remind everybody, this is the first of two shows this week. So make sure you don't miss the college football show coming out tomorrow. I'll be back, so you can always hear my ramblings on college football. We'll be joined by Nate Custer. We're going to be talking backs and Nate on college football, a lot more about the Miami Hurricanes. We're going to be looking at the Pac-12 and the Big 12, the two conference previews coming out this week. You won't want to miss it. So for Robert Neely, for Russell Baxter, I am Matt Baxter. Thank you so much for listening to National Football Authority Radio.